I'd like to summarize a fascinating sicha of Rav Lichtenstein in 1997. And it's a sicha I delivered during Siddur Shlishit. And it's fascinating on several fronts, and I hope to try to illuminate them. It's obviously reflective of Rav Lichtenstein's ability, and even insistence, and something that I sense is very similar to Rabbi Soloveitchik, not having been a direct student of Rabbi Soloveitchik for that long, but having read and been cued into his machshava through Rav Lichtenstein's sichot and discussions with us, the belief that the world of machshava, personal development, midos, mussar, should all stem from halacha, rather than speculative ideas about religion. And halacha is the grounding, and those who want to get a more thorough sense of this either have or can read Halachic Man, which is probably where the Rav articulates this most forcefully. And to a degree also that it's not just general broad halachic infusion or inspiration, but even halachic details, the details of the halacha, are instrumental in yielding a deeper developmental concept or religious notion. And those are just some of the things I felt in the Sicha. I'll start with the Gemara in Erevin. The Rav Lichtenstein started with the Gemara in Sota, but I'll reverse it a little for the sake of organization, in this presentation at least. The Gemara in Shabbos on Samach Tes discusses a very unique situation, that a person is on Shabbos, forgets all the 39 melachos, but still knows that it's Shabbos. And he knows that it's Shabbos, even though he's not aware of the 39 primary melachos. It's difficult. How can you be aware of Shabbos and the prohibitions of Shabbos, not just the spirit of Shabbos, but the prohibitions, without knowing any of the 39 melachos? So the Gemara replies that this situation is feasible according to Rabbi Akiva. There's a halacha of Tchum Shabbos, which is how Rav Lichtenstein began his Sicha, because it's Parshas B'Shalach, which alludes to Tchum Shabbos, and at least according to Rabbi Akiva, pivots Tchum Shabbos as an Isur D'Oraisa, Al Yetzei Ishmi Mekomo, person cannot travel more than 2,000 amos outside of his city limits. The Rabbanon hold that this is all the Rabbanon, but Rabbi Akiva felt that it's D'Oraisa. So according to Rabbi Akiva, there's an added Isur. Beyond the 39 which stem from Mishkan, there's an added Isur, which is derived from Parshas B'Shalach, and that's Minatar. So in theory, a person can be ignorant of the Mishkan Shabbos connection, but fully sensitive to the stay-at-home prohibition of Tchum Shabbos. Now, Rav Lichtenstein quoted a sefer, the Amudei Or, by Rav Yechiel Heller, who asks an interesting question. There is a third shita out there, which the Rambam quotes, that Tchum Shabbos is D'Oraisa, it is biblical, but it's not limited to 2,000 amos, it's limited to 24,000 amos, a much broader scale. You can travel more or less in your region, but not change cities. Or according to the classic view, you have to be basically stationed, basically frozen in place within the city. Whereas according to this other version, it's D'Oraisa, and it stretches essentially for 12 mil. Why doesn't the Gemara in Shabbos, why doesn't it quote that sheet? There are two sheetos that Tchum Shabbos is D'Oraisa, and in theory, recognition or acknowledgement of either of those positions would qualify someone who knows about the Yisurim of Shabbos, even though he's ignorant or has forgotten the 39 melachos. So why is the Gemara honing in on Rabbi Akiva's position when there's a third position with equal D'Oraisa origin? Rav Lichtenstein wanted to suggest that essentially, though both positions hold that Tchum Shabbos is D'Oraisa, they reflect different ways of viewing Tchum Shabbos. For Rabbi Akiva, for whom Tchum Shabbos was limited to 2,000 amos, essentially it's a prohibition similar to all the other prohibitions, not plowing, planting, harvesting, writing, tearing, erasing. It's an action you're not allowed to travel beyond your area. It's a prohibition to limit human activity on Shabbos. But according to the view that you can travel and you can journey 2,000 amos beyond city limits, but you can't travel more than 24,000 amos, the Isser is entirely different, and it's not an Isser lotase, like the Melachos. It's an Isser essay. It tries to create an environment of Shabbos, and hence recognition of that prohibition alone would not qualify or define someone as someone who understands the Isserim of Shabbos without recognition of the 39 Melachos. So if we're looking for that spot that identity of someone that's ignorant of the 39 melachos but is aware of the prohibitions of Shabbos, it's got to be someone who's aware of Tchum Shabbos in Rabbi Akiva's world. But if he's aware of Tchum Shabbos in this other shita, which the Rambam doesn't name, that would not qualify as awareness of the prohibitions of Shabbos because it's not a prohibition. So Rav Aaron felt that philosophically this was a captivating idea. The week, he said, is a time to travel, change, to grow, to develop, to expose yourself beyond your protected shell, forge your personality in a world of, as he wrote, conflict, change, and tension. It's an opportunity for us to condition our muscles, to develop ourselves by exposure. Shabbat, Rav Aaron, however, said, according to this position, not that you're prohibited to walk, but it's a whole different target developmentally. And he quoted a few lines from a poem by Stevenson. Shabbos is a time when, quote, home is the sailor, home from the sea, and the hunter, home from the hill. It's an opportunity to return home, to the base, to a secure, stable environment, to review everything you've encountered, to mold our personalities. And essentially, this halacha reminds us of the importance of both modalities of human growth and development, of exposure, encounter, travel, and Shabbos is an opportunity for concentration, consolidation, contemplation, distillation of ideas, internalization. These are my words, but more or less, Rav Lichtenstein's, at least what I feel is his intentions. And it's fascinating to me, and this is another aspect I see in this shir, Rav Aaron's ability to draw from Shabbos not just the classic guidelines and parameters of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Shabbos really is so pivotal, and that's why desecration of Shabbos is a cardinal sin, because Shabbos lies at the heart of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the creator of our world, of our universe. But there's a lesson in Shabbos having nothing to do, so to speak, directly with the interface between man and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or man and his world, but man and himself developmentally. And obviously the development of man is crucial to religious experience. So the deeper man develops, the deeper his avodas Hashem. But it's so reflective of how Rav Aaron felt that there was so much religious meaning and opportunity in the growth of man and the development of man, assuming that it then becomes oriented to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a deeper person. And it also reminds us how Rav Lichtenstein, I mentioned this before, was able to draw such deep meaning, even from topics that would seem to be no way, reflective of existential or religious development. This is very dry laws of Erev Tchumen and how far you can or can't travel. I was actually earlier today, I was so excited about this year to give this lecture. I asked Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, I said, I'm just so intrigued by this lecture in 1997. And Rav Moshe said to me the following story, that Rav Aaron was once attending a bar mitzvah, a very close friend of his, child of a very close friend, which Rav Moshe was in attendance. And the rule in the shul was they didn't want outside speakers Shabbos morning. But they did learn two Mishnayos before Kriyas HaTara. So they asked Rav Lichtenstein to deliver those two Mishnayos. And pumped the Mishnayos they were up to, they were about to learn in their sequencing, was a very, very technical mission about Pasei Biros, about creating a virtual framed environment, which is a leniency to allow people to travel to Yishalayim during Shalosh Regalim and draw water from wells. Essentially four brackets in all four quadrants, northeast, northwest, southeast, southwest, and the area becomes imaged or zoned like Rishus HaYachid. And Rav Aaron turned that very, very dry discussion into a metaphor, a symbolism for frameworks in life as opposed to the absence of frameworks, just the ability to see metaphor in everything and to therefore indulge in Chazal's descriptions. It's just so powerful and so really amazing. This is such an example. Who would have thought that Tchum Shabbos contains such meaning? Who would have thought that the meaning doesn't just mediate our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the two different ways in which we develop as people? Who would have thought that it can derive from some very, very unknown shita quoted by the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Chav Zayin? Isn't even mentioned in the Gemara in Sotah on Daf Chav Zayin, which describes Tchum Shabbos in Erevin Mendav Mem Aleph. And here's the next part that struck me about this year. Rav Aaron then extrapolated this idea to two other areas, one related to Shabbos and one related to areas independent of Shabbos, but it's this consistency that we felt and the ability to unify seemingly distinct discussions, which was on such powerful display in the world of Lamdas, when Rav Lichtenstein would take random details and unify them through the common logic of lamdas, and I'm planning at some point to deliver a series of shiurim on lamdas and the importance of lamdas and what its purpose is. I don't know when that will happen, but I've been thinking about it a lot and how people who are unexposed, underexposed, don't have a sufficient appreciation. But even in the world of machshava, Rav Aaron was able to loop together and integrate differing ideas. So the Gemara in Erevin, Daf Mem Beis Amud Beis, quotes the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that if a person is in a wagon traveling on Shabbos, when Shabbos occurs, and he woke up after Shabbos, so what is considered his ground zero from which we measure the 2,000 amos that he can travel? Is it when Shabbos fell, which is typically, that becomes your ground zero, wherever you were for Shabbos, wherever your Kona Shvisa, as the Gemara's language is, or where he was when he woke up? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says that the 2,000 amma radius stretches from his location at the point of awakening, not the location when Shabbos began, which is atypical. And there are two different explanations which are contradictory of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's Shita. One says that when a person is asleep when Shabbos occurs, he's inanimate, he's like a rock, he has no influence on his life, and therefore that moment that he's sleeping when Shabbos fell is not a pivotal moment. The second opinion says that the opposite, that just like a person whose conscience is growing and that moment is pivotal when he's awake, similarly when he's sleeping, even though he's sleeping, he's still active, and every moment he acquires personal space as he travels beyond which he can't go, and the fact that he wasn't conscious of his acquisition is irrelevant. The fact that he exists and that he's sleeping, and every time he moves, remember, it wasn't usher for him to travel. He wasn't aware on Shabbos. So every movement that he makes isn't a violation of Tchon Shabbos, and every step the wagon takes, or every mile the wagon travels, is his new area. So these are two contradictory opinions. One assumes that human beings are molded by their surroundings, and we're shaped by our environments. And to this view, a person who's sleeping and is devoid of any ability to choose and to be influenced is an object, and that object is in no way involved in setting place and location. So the location is only set when he awakens and is molded by external factors, which he isn't when he's asleep. So as long as he's asleep, he's just an inanimate object that isn't Kona Shvisa, that doesn't set location. The second opinion claims that we're not just molded, but inside out. We choose, we build. And even if we're not responding to the world around us when we're sleeping, we're still alive. There's still a subconscious activity. And even though there's no interaction and being molded, wherever you are, you set location. And since, of course, in the application of this Gemara, you're traveling from location to location without violating Tchum Shabbos because you're sleeping. So each location you travel through becomes your place until you wake up and you can't acquire any new space. And I'll quote Rav Lichtenstein, or at least the English translation. The tension between these two views is one which always accompanies us. We acknowledge that when we go out to sail the seas beyond our safe dry shore, we are formed to a certain extent by that which surrounds us, and that we are vessels in the grasp of the molder. However, when we return on Shabbat, we affirm that it is we who place the final stamp on who we are, that by review and decision we do indeed create and mold ourselves. So essentially, Shabbos versus the weekday to Rav Lichtenstein represented this dichotomy. On the one hand, we're molded, and we should be molded. And the greater our exposure to healthy and productive stimulus and opportunities, the deeper a person we become, and hopefully the greater Oved Hashem we become. And Shabbos is the opportunity to return home, travel less, consolidate, internalize, and remind ourselves that we are the masters of our own fate, and we determine our own reality. And he drew that from this very, very detailed discussion in the Gemara in Erevin about why a sleeping person sets his place by the point where he wakes up, not by the point where he was sleeping when Shabbos fell. Either because while he's sleeping, he's nothing because he's not being influenced, and the moment he awakens becomes his set space. Or while he's sleeping, he's essentially acting as a human being, acquiring new space in a permitted fashion because he's not awake, so his final space is his lastly acquired space. And then finally, Rav Aaron quoted the Gemara in Erevin, Daf Yutes, that says that there's a machlokas between Rav Chisda and Rav Meir. Rav Chisda says that a person should learn from only one Rebbe. Rav Meir says they should learn from many Rebbes. And the truth is, I found a parallel statement of Rav Meir in Avos Rav Nosson that says a person should also learn from many Rebbes. But at least Rav Lichtenstein was focusing on the machlokas. And Rav Chisda, of course, changes his opinion and says that at a formative stage, you should learn only from one Rebbe, like Rav Meir. And when you grow up in advance, then you can learn from multiple Rebbeim. And it's an important question. I've spoken about it before, and during your formative years, consistency and continuity and reinforcing ideas both in learning and in life is so crucial. But as you grow older, you shouldn't be trapped by a certain derech, and you should be exposed to as many rabbanim and drachim as you can. And for Avaron, though, this dichotomy was again reflective. Should a person place himself in a situation where he'll be molded by multiple sources and drink from different wells? Or should he just be personally and directly authoring his own identity with only one source? And, of course, for Rav Aaron, it was never one or the other. It was not just a dichotomy, but a complementary, multiple-level experience. So I think this is just the stunning sicha that he gave, and it was given in Bishalach 1997, and it highlights so many issues that I've seen in Rav Lichtenstein. Obviously, the desire to draw concepts of machshava and personal development and religious faith from the halachic world, and not just from the halachic world writ large, but from the details of the halachic sugya, sound like a shir, but obviously it wasn't a halachic shir now, but it was driven by halachic knowledge. Number two, the ability to read into Shabbos not just the classics, namely our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as our creator, but aspects of human development, internal human aspects that are necessary for human wealth and richness, and obviously Avodas Hashem. And then finally, the ability to extrapolate multiple discussions in Erevin, or in even one discussion about how many Rebbeim you should learn from, and to extrapolate that into human development and to unite or to fuse these various conversations.